Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I'm Kenneth Amendurie, and I'm joined today with a returning guest, someone who is just going to give us an idea of what's going on right now. $2,000 gold this morning as we do this interview here. Silver's over 25 bucks. We're in a really exciting time for precious metals, and someone who's given us a lot of insight on precious metals and insight on the miners throughout the years. But especially as we go into this this 2020 year, is Dave Kranzler of Investment Research Dynamics. And I appreciate him here coming on the show. Definitely check out his newsletter, subscribe to his premium service. It's a must read, especially if you want to be positioned in this environment. So Dave, thank you so much for coming on the show with me today.
Kenneth, thanks for having me back on again. It's a pleasure.
Well, let's talk about what's going on. I just, you know, here's a softball. My goodness, $2,000 gold, $25 silver. We are going through key resistance levels, which I think is very telling. So just kind of give us your thoughts on this. I mean, obviously, this is very exciting for people who've been listening to you and to the podcast for some time now. What are we seeing here? Are you selling your gold?
What? You're telling me gold's over 2,000 today? I better look at my screens. Not that I haven't been staring at them for about the last 3.5 hours. Well, there's a couple questions, I guess, in there. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what's driving this today. Because, you know, right around just after the stock market opened, gold started just, you know, taking off. I mean, it looks like a rocket ship that doesn't, you know, that isn't, it's not a SpaceX rocket ship that blows up on the launch pad. I mean, this is a rocket ship that looks like it's headed a lot higher. So,
well, we've had a lot of things, right? I mean, it's gold hitting all-time highs is going to go into the headlines. I mean, we've had central banks now front running this gold move, you know, really berating gold, but then owning it into this upside, you know, and then you have the change of the class of gold as a tier one asset. I mean, it's amazing what has led up to this and watching it play out. And what's also interesting is the effort of the manipulators to not be able to keep it down where it was, at least. I mean, maybe they're keeping it down from much higher prices, but at least it's 2,000, right?
Well, and that's, I apologize if there's background noise. There's a carpet cleaning machine that's running right now. I don't know if you can hear that.
It's very minimal.
Okay. Well, you know, central bank, in terms of central banks front running, the Western central banks, as far as I know, they've been, if anything, net sellers of gold, or at least lessors of gold, leasing it out to the bullion banks, who then, you know, use it for whatever they need it for. The Eastern Hemisphere central banks have been buying gold now probably for at least the last 18 months pretty aggressively. And that's, you know, across the board. I get a thrice daily report on the gold, on the global gold market. It's called John Brimlow's Gold Jottings, or JB Gold Jottings. It's kind of expensive, but it's useful for me, you know, managing a precious metals and mining stock fund. And all of a sudden, I mean, Vietnam at one point was the fifth largest importer of gold in the world, and I don't know where they stand right now on that list. And they had been pretty dormant for the last several years, and all of a sudden they show up as big buyers. So, and that's usually the people, the public over there, not the central bank. The public, they tend to, because there's been long-term ongoing devaluation of their currency, which also happens to be, I think it's tied to the dollar. And so the public there has always been a pretty big buyer of physical gold. Another aspect, you know, that I think is driving this is, again, the data that I get on a daily basis in this report shows the import premiums and the data from India. And ever since the ever since India opened back up from the virus lockdown, and India had been one of the tightest and strictest countries with the lockdown. I mean, that country shut down, and there was no gold going in there other than smuggled gold for about 3 months or 2.5 months. And actually the Indian public had been pretty dormant in terms of buying gold since probably November, December. So all of a sudden they become a huge factor in the gold market. And I said, you know, as India starts to open up, it's going to be like waking up a starving elephant, and the public there is probably going to make up for lost time. And at least if you can trust the data that we're seeing, which I do, it looks like they've got a voracious appetite, and it hasn't been price sensitive the way it normally is. Usually if, you know, we've had a $20, $30, $40 pop in the price of gold, all of a sudden the Indian public stops buying for a few days to wait and see if the price pulls back, or eventually they'll get used to having to pay a higher price. I mean, their buying has been very steady ever since the country opened back up. And so I think the simplest explanation for this, and to circle back to something that you had said that is a very important point, it doesn't seem like the bullion banks have been successfully able to cap the price rise. I mean, you would have thought if anything, it was going to take a while to punch through 2000. And I mean, we tested 2000 a couple times in the last 10 or 11 trading days. And right now we're solidly through it. So I think that I think it's very real. And many of us have been saying this for a long time. I think it's very real that the demand for physical gold that can actually be delivered and not, you know, say, you know, tell you that it's delivered, but it's sitting in our vault, which is what happens in London and New York. But buyers who want delivery, they want possession of the gold. I think the demand for that is outweighing the ability of the banks to keep a lid on the price of gold using paper gold.
Well said. And thanks for that insight there. Yeah, it's crazy. I look at the price of gold hitting all-time highs. Now, silver, it's been exciting. I mean, we've seen a great move now. It's now outpacing gold. The last time we did our interview, silver was underperforming gold. And here we are. Silver is $25, but still way below its all-time high. The silver to gold ratio is still favoring silver on a historical basis. And so what are your thoughts when it comes to, you know, I guess, what's your thesis for silver? Is it based on gold moving higher and silver just going further than gold? Or what do you think is the strongest reason to own silver at the moment?
Well, I mean, there's still extremely strong reasons to own both gold and silver right now. And to the extent that, you know, you're going to buy silver, investors or people seeking wealth preservation are going to buy silver for the same exact reason that they're going to buy gold, right? The two oldest forms of real money, but that have held their value remarkably for well over 5,000 years. So to the extent that gold is cheap relative to the quantity of fiat currency circulating around the world, silver is cheap to both that and it's cheap to gold. So as you mentioned, the gold-silver ratio, it spiked up to as high as like 133 or 135 at one point, and everyone was scratching their head. It's like, why is this happening? And it may have been just simply that the industrial demand for silver, the bottom fell out for it, and that took away some of the price pressure. But the gold-silver ratio last week traded below 80, and then it bounced briefly above 80. And now I guess today it's got to be back below 80. I mean, silver's up 5.6% and gold's up 1.5%. So if I recall, and again, these numbers are off the top of my head, but between 2008 and 2011, I believe the gold-silver ratio went from something like 80 to the low 30s. So I got to think, I mean, I don't believe in the symmetry of these ratios. I think we could easily see the gold-silver ratio go back to 30 again and maybe even lower this time around. I mean, I've always said at some point before this the bull market in precious metals is over, we're going to see a gold-silver ratio that's closer to the long-term historical mean, which is, you know, say 20, or, you know, some people reference 16. It's somewhere in there. I think that's very possible. I'm not predicting it, but I think it's possible. So, but I would say we're going to see a much lower gold silver ratio. And so, you know, if you don't want to pay $2,000 for an ounce of gold, spend $2,000 and get 80 ounces of silver right now, right? And, you know, again, the other factor here is at some point, silver is going to, you know, the poor man's gold idea behind silver is going to kick in. And people who don't have enough money to accumulate, you know, 5 or 6 ounces of gold or whatever, they're going to buy a bunch of silver, and that's going to drive the price higher.
Yeah.
And in fact, actually, if you calculate the gold silver ratio using the premiums that you have to pay to buy an ounce of silver right now, the gold silver ratio is much lower than 80.
100%. And it's interesting what we're seeing right now. Now, Bank of America is public on the record with a $3,000 price projection for gold.
Which
I think is interesting. I mean, just a 30-to-1 ratio would put silver at $100 if gold goes to 3,000. And it's just like, I guess it's so hard to even fathom that. You know what I mean? For people, they just seen so much manipulation. Silver has just been berated. And you know, that gold-silver ratio has just been trending higher, right? You know, silver just keeps getting more and more disconnected on the chart, which is almost instilling a fear. Like, is silver really have that ratio, that correlation to gold? Does it matter how it's mined out of the ground? Do people care? And again, silver has to go through its all-time high of roughly 50 to go to that 30-to-1, which is $100 silver. I mean, and we're at $25 right now. It's still a ton of upside just to do 30-to-1 gold-silver ratio at $3,000 gold.
I mean, I think there's still a ton of upside in gold, let alone silver. So, I mean, you know, for the whatever you think the upside is for gold, you know, the upside for silver based on where the gold silver ratio is now and a target of 30 for the gold silver ratio, there's almost three times the amount of upside for silver here.
I think
what we're seeing here with silver and silver kind of the gold silver ratio kind of starting to catch down to a more normalized historical level, I think the silver is now starting to be appreciated for its monetary attributes as opposed to its industrial attributes.
Sorry for jumping in right there. I don't want to be like,
oh, no worries,
in that podcast with him and Joe Rogan. I don't know if you saw that one. It was a good one. But anyways, yeah, it's just an interesting time, you know, and I feel like people have, I'm concerned about a lot of people who sold out of gold at $1,500. Because of they've been beaten down so much. They bought at 1200, but that's after, you know, years of buying maybe a little higher and just watching it go down, seeing it go back to say a little bit of a profit, break even, they're just done with it, right? How many people are doing that now with silver at 25? You know, maybe silver goes to 30, like, my goodness, I thought this would never happen. And so, you know, how I feel like that's gonna get a lot of people who've been long-term holders of the metal just looking to dump it because it got back to a reasonable level, but boom, you know, the lid comes off from under, from over the price, and things go parabolic. And I just feel like markets have a way of inflicting maximum pain on investors. And I feel like that's what it's important about this call today is, you know, where we are right now, managing our emotions, managing our psychology, and actually making some money and protecting our wealth in this move.
Well, I think the key to what you just said, well, besides managing the psychology, is I mean, people who really understand the precious metals aren't buying gold and silver as an investment. I mean, you buy fine art, or you buy a stock as, or a bond, isn't it? That's an investment, right? You're buying, you know, it's kind of like a house. You're buying a house to live in. You're buying gold and silver as wealth preservation, because they've held their value over thousands and thousands of years, as opposed to fiat currencies, which come and go. So, it looks like the current era of fiat currencies is on the way out again. So, you know, to look at, you know, say, oh, geez, I bought gold at 1200 and it's at 1500. I'm going to take my profit because that's a 25, what is that? A 33% gain on my, you're missing out on the reason why you're buying this stuff. And the reason why gold is going higher, gold will buy the same amount of, widgets or products or whatever, a basket of utils, as we'd call them in economics, right? A basket of utils. Gold will buy the same amount of utils, or the same number of baskets of utils now as it would have 10 years ago. What's changed is that the money supply has increased so much that, you know, it's increased relative to the marginal wealth output of the economic system, so that it takes more dollars to buy the same amount of output 10 years ago. So it's not so much gold has stayed stationary. It's just relative to the supply of gold in the world, the amount of dollars is mushroom. So it's going to take more dollars to buy the same amount of gold. And that's really what's moving here, right?
Absolutely.
So that's why I say you can't look at gold and silver as an investment per se. You're using it as a wealth preservation tool. And that doesn't mean, I can buy a Cadillac with two rolls of silver, of gold eagles right now, you know, and if the price goes up, it'll only take me one roll of gold eagles. You know, that means, you know, throughout time, now and 10 years from now, it's only going to take me two rolls of 10 packs of gold eagles to buy a Cadillac. Mm. Whereas 10 years from now, you know, a $60,000 car might cost you $120,000, right? That's kind of the concept behind why you buy gold and silver.
Right. No, that's,
and I wouldn't
so
even
good.
Call it buying gold and silver. I would say converting your fiat currency, your monopoly money, into real money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the Bitcoin people, you know, they want to buy their Lambos with their Bitcoin. You got your sights set on your dream Cadillac and converting your gold.
I just use Cadillac euphemistically. I don't buy American
cars. I'm just joking. Yeah, it's such a crazy time, you know, in the precious metals. And it's not even that crazy, right? You know, it's crazy because this is much more than we've been trained to expect. And so again, it's this idea of, hey, this is happening. And I want people to understand that. And again, if you sold your gold, sold your silver, and with your upside, where do you put it, right? That's the other question. It's like, wait a minute. Like, okay, you've sold it, but then what, are you going to hold cash? You're going to buy, you know, overvalued stock, real estate? You know, it's like, it's this conundrum where it's a casino, and sure, it's gone up, but it's really the dollars that have depreciated because they've been inflated. But where do you put it? So that's the other problem with this environment we're in. There's not a real good place to reallocate in this environment. If you'd like to comment on that, feel free.
Yeah, no. And that's a good question. I've had that conversation with several people over the last few weeks. And I mean, I came to this conclusion a long time ago, but in sort of thinking about, you know, what's the end game for this system. And I keep coming back to what happened in Weimar Germany, or you could say Zimbabwe, or there's been, you know, repeatedly has happened several times in several South American countries over the last several decades. And that is, you know, if it, you look at all the money the Fed's printing, and you look at, geez, the stock market is insanely overvalued. The housing market's insanely overvalued. I'm sure fertile farmland is very high in price right now. I don't follow the price of farmland. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm not going to chase these crazy tech stocks to the moon, because I know it's a guaranteed loser at some point. So, you know, what do I do? Do I hold cash? You know, mm-hmm. then I'm not getting any kind of return on my money. And I think right now we're in the proverbial, and I don't know if it was Mark Twain or Will Rogers that originally said it, but you need to be concerned about the return of your money, not the return on your money. And with gold and silver, it's demonstrated over 5,000 years that your money stays constant. The value of your money stays constant when you have gold and silver. So I was having this conversation with a big investor in my fund, and he's just like, because he wanted to know, what do I do? I've got munis, and that's the only other thing I can think of, you know, high quality munis. And even then I kind of winced. But, and he just kept, he said, you know, I keep coming back to, I need to have, gold and silver is the only solution that I can think of, but it doesn't feel right putting most of my wealth into gold and silver. And I said, well, you know, your alternative is you can sell your stock portfolio, you know, sell whatever real estate you have and hold the cash and put it in your mattress. But then you're looking at what happened in Weimar, Germany. You know, on one night, November 13th, 1923, I believe it is, you go to bed and your mattress is stuffed with millions of marks, or in this case, millions of dollar bills. And you wake up the next day to find out that currency has been canceled and it's worth, I think, one billionth of what it was the night before. But that didn't happen with people who had gold. If you had gold, it was worth the same amount, that, you know, the next day as it was the night before. So, I mean, even holding cash is a loser right now.
So true. And, you know, one thing I want to point out is we did see that correction happen in the March lows. Everything sold off, gold and silver. We talked about that in our last interview. But then we started to see that move back. And here we are, you know, with a really strong move back in both gold and silver and the resource stocks. But going into this bull market mentality, I think it's really interesting, the confirmations that we're seeing in the investor sentiment. But I almost feel like if we did see a massive crash in the stock market or resource stocks and, you know, gold and silver going down with it, I feel like it's, if you're not at your computer, you might miss it this time, because people are going to remember, hey, we are in a bull market. This is confirmed. And I don't think investors in the resource sector and in the gold and silver space are going to be, they're going to let it go that far this time or go that long. If you will, because again, that recency bias and hey, you know, we're in this bull market and it's happening.
Absolutely. And the beautiful thing about what's happening right now is that outside of the long-term, you know, dedicated precious metals market investors, precious metals sector investors, there's not a lot of investors that are migrating to this sector yet. I mean, It's just astounding to me, you know, like I can pick out, you know, probably two dozen junior mining stocks that have quadrupled since the March bottom. And yet you never hear about it on financial bubble vision TV. You never hear about it in the media. They don't talk about it. It's incredible. I mean, they might mention gold, you know, oh, gold's higher. We're not sure why. You know, we don't recommend. Then they bring someone on who says, yeah, we don't recommend it for your portfolio. But I mean, it's just astounding. You know, everyone's looking at these tech stocks that have doubled or tripled. But there's, I mean, and again, I mean, I'm not confining myself to stocks that have tripled or quadrupled. There's many stocks that have gone up 5, 6, 7 times in the last 3 months, and it's just getting no attention. And
100%.
Someone suggested to me, we got to figure out a way to get the Robinhood traders involved in the sector. I'm like, no, No. We want them coming in with a vengeance at the end of this bull run, because I want to be able to unload all my positions onto them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's interesting. You know, and it's interesting too, how quick the parabolic phase of the bull market happens, right? You know, when we go into that phase of, you know, well, you know, silver's move in the 2011, I mean, it would happen from like, you know, $20 to $30 to 50 in a matter of like weeks, right? Or something crazy, right, like that. And same thing with similar with gold too, but not to that degree. Silver was obviously right, a lot more movement going on. But I mean, going into that bubble phase, I mean, I don't believe we're in a bubble phase, but I think we're going to go into that parabolic phase. And, you know, you got to be thinking about preparing your mind for what's going to happen. You know, obviously have your investments that, you know, are tied to gold and silver, be ready to sell them. And, but then, you know, are you really going to sell your gold and silver? I mean, gold goes to 10,000, corrects back to 5,000, you know, maybe just be prepared for that, you know, type of thing, right?
That's another great point also. You know, just as an aside, I was just kind of thinking, you know, I wonder if Donald Trump sitting in his Oval Office with his Ameritrade platform up watching gold and silver. And if he is, I wonder what he's thinking.
he's been on record liking gold, right? You know, he had Atmex in his building. He took some payment for the payment in gold for it. I think there's some gold understanding, but he's a cheerleader obviously for the U.S. economy and the dollar. So
yeah, he's a politician. He likes everything except Democrats, and he used to be a Democrat, so
right, exactly.
So to your point about, you know, is there a level where you do sell? And that's a great question. And I mean, there's not a definitive answer to that. The way that I think about it is, you know, you have an investment thesis, or again, I don't want to call gold and silver an investment, but just for lack of a better term, you know, you have a thesis for why you're converting fiat paper into physical gold and silver and supplementing it with mining stocks. Because if you're going to buy gold and silver, because you'd think it's going a lot higher, you may as well enjoy the leverage that the mining stocks afford. So, but what, you know, what's the end game? You know, you know, if you have a thesis, you got to think about what the end game is and what your exit strategy is. And I've always thought that the end game for the precious metals bull, and again, we're talking about a secular bull market that started 2000, early 2001, that's had one cycle from late 2000 to late 2011, and then a 4.5 year corrective pullback period. And, you know, we could have another 11-year cycle here. I don't know if it'll last that long this time, because I think what I think could be coming is going to happen sooner than 11 years. But and we'd have to start measuring it from late 2015 also, because that's really when this cycle started. But I've always thought that at some point there's going to be a global monetary reset that will reintroduce gold and silver into the monetary system. And whatever entity or consortium puts that into effect is probably going to fix the price of gold, you know, as kind of an anchor to whatever the currency is that they use, so that you have the fungibility, right? So you have the wealth backing of gold and silver, and then you know, the only way you get divisibility is to create a currency that's backed by that gold and silver. And so they're going to fix the price, right? We had the price of gold was fixed at $20 for a long time. And then it was, you know, refixed by FDR at 35. And that fix lasted until, well, technically it lasted until Nixon closed the gold window. But, it, you know, that fix, the ceiling on that fix was blown out in the 60s, you know, as a similar situation that's happening now happened then, where the supply of gold was well short of the paper claims against that supply of gold. So, you know, I think at some point we're gonna, you know, they'll reset the whole monetary system, fix the price of gold. I don't know if they'll fix the price of silver, because I don't think the price of silver was ever fixed. I think it's always just been considered money. And that's your exit price right there, right? Because then it's, you know, you freely exchange your gold for the new currency at that fixed price.
Yeah.
And I think that's how it'll play out. And what that price is, I have no idea. There's several different ways that you can calculate it based on historical standards, but who knows?
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. And I think it's interesting, you know, when we look at history, you know, gold and the currencies that were tied to gold, it really goes to show that it's still a risk owning the currency and not having the gold, because they right. can disconnect the gold price from the currency. It's like, we'll have a gold standard if it works. And then when it stops working, we're going to inflate your currency. So even with a gold standard, you got to be careful with what you're dealing right. with, right?
That's right.
So, but that it does go to show what the upside is and kind of what's going on with the monetary system, how things might get some sort of anchoring and some settling, because right now things are just going crazy in terms of inflation, money supply, and out of control money printing that's going on. And my goodness, what's the next crisis going to look like if we even get there? So with that, Dave Kranzler, everyone. Dave, if you want to let people know some final thoughts here and just what they can learn if they visit you at Investment Research Dynamics.
Sure. Well, first of all, I just say that, again, and this is from feedback that I get from a lot of my subscribers or, email questions. You know, did I miss this? Is it too late to get in? And, my view is that based on the way I think this is going to play out and based on all the money printing that's going on right now, that we've got a long way to go in this bull move. And we haven't even begun to get the benefits of a stock market crash, because when the stock market crashes, some portion of that capital that's been chasing these idiot stocks is going to move into the precious metal sector. And when that happens, I mean, you could really see this stuff move. I mean, saw a statistic the other day that on a global asset allocation basis, gold is less than 0.5% of portfolio allocations. You know, you move that allocation to 1 or 2%, and you're going to look at $3,000 or $4,000 gold. And you know, a Huey index that's at 350 right now is going to be at 1,200, right? And in 1980, the last time you know when gold had hit a prior all-time high, investment portfolios had a 5% allocation in gold. So if we go back to that level of allocation, you know, Katie, bar the door. Mm-hmm. So no, I don't think, don't be worried about the level that you get in here, because it's going to go a lot higher. I'd be more worried about sitting on your hands and end up chasing the market at much higher levels, which plenty of people will end up doing.
Right.
So that's kind of my final thoughts there. And as you mentioned, my website's Investment Research Dynamics, and I write and publish two subscription newsletters, the Mining Stock Journal and the Short Sellers Journal. And there's links on my website where you can find out more about those.
And I'll add on to your point there about people feeling like they missed. The other side of the equation is people that are earning new money that they didn't have 2-3 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago. It's always like this idea that maybe, you know, there's this lump sum of cash, but then people, like, you know, we're all dealing with new money that's coming in, and you got to forget what happened a week ago too. You got to allocate that money now, right? And so having that proper mindset, hey, we're still early in this, and feeling comfortable averaging in with new money that you're earning, it's still important to do that and to have some managing of expectations of, you know, hey, forget about what happened. You know, I didn't have the money to do it, let's say, a year ago or 2 years ago. This is where I am right now, and what's my best option moving forward. But with that, hey, Dave, thank you so much for coming on the show once again, sharing your insight. It's always a pleasure. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Kenneth. I enjoyed it.